This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Ladies and gentlemen, Orange Bloods, welcome back to the Deep Dig Podcast. Here on the Yak, Austin, my name is Alex Dunlap. This is the podcast for the personnel of the Texas Longhorns football team. We have the breakdown right now of the offense and the defense from the Big 12 championship game versus Oklahoma. As we move forward into the offseason and into the Sugar Bowl, which is an awesome, you know, just an awesome end to this season. They kind of ended with a bit of a thud versus Oklahoma in the rematch. But, you know, how cool is it that, you know, Texas fans have to love that. All is right in the world. If Texas is playing Oklahoma every year and as they're both top 10 teams for a shot at the college football playoff, and if Texas is just playing in that spot, you got to be happy. What a consolation prize, right? What a consolation prize for Texas to be able to go to, you know, New Orleans and play against the Georgia Bulldogs, who's gonna, that's gonna be a tough game. Maybe next week we'll kind of talk about that. But you know, as you guys continue to consume this content through the course of the offseason and into spring football, you know, there'll be some different sort of topics that we have around here. We'll talk some recruiting, how these different recruits and prospects sort of fit in with Texas's scheme, with what Texas needs. There's a lot of really important issues right now that still need to be addressed. Also, there's other stuff like we'll probably have one where we break down the Georgia team and kind of what, you know, what's there with them. Once spring football starts, we'll definitely, you know, even before spring football, we'll do a bunch of depth chart stuff. I will be at the Senior Bowl covering everything that I do for rosterwatch.com. Again, I'm Alex Dunlap. I'm the lead football analyst at Orange Bloods, co-founder at Rosterwatch, Pro Football Writers of America, new media chairman. You know, Rosterwatch is a huge part of my, you know, job and my income. And so I'll be traveling with, you know, my guys and my co-founders at Rosterwatch to places like the Senior Bowl, the Combine, the Pro Day Tour. During that time, I'm hoping to get audio and insight from scouts and players, and maybe people who've faced Texas or people who've thought about Texas or coaches who've gone up against them, and be that on the football field, be that in recruiting, and just kind of see what I can come up with for this pod as we get into the offseason, because it won't always be these game-by-game breakdowns, of course. We only have, what, 13 of these, you know, per year. But this is one of them. We could have 14 per year, right? This year we got 14 because we're going to have the Sugar Bowl breakdowns. But I've finally realized that I have at least two listeners on this podcast. There have been two people that have reached out to me via email, and both have given me the exact same feedback. And that is, keep it simple, stupid. Talk football. Don't talk, you know, don't talk about fishing, which I was hunting, or your kids. Or you know what I wanted to talk about tonight is cedar fever, because I feel like that shit's kicking up early this year. Oh, do you know what else I wanted to talk about? How the health insurance is a racket. But I won't do that. Maybe as time frees up a little bit, moving into the off season, and as we start getting, you know, compensated for these podcasts, I might do another podcast that'll be like a variety podcast where all I do is talk about that stuff. So if you miss that stuff out of me, you know, look forward to maybe some new stuff on the podcast idea and pilot that I had called Daddy Daycare. I'll probably start picking that up in the new year. And that's just going to be fishing, hunting, dad stuff, appliances, power tools, guns. It's going to be awesome. But I'm not going to do it now because I don't have any time whenever I'm having to do this stuff. And from the two listeners of this podcast, I've gotten feedback to say, keep it on football. So we will keep it on football. This is The Deep Dig, episode 45. And look, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what everybody says about the yards per play from the Oklahoma Sooners versus Texas. I consider it a defensive implosion versus Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. It was absolutely abysmal along the defensive line and in the defensive backfield. If we look at the snap counts and percentage of total defensive snaps played from the Big 12 championship game versus Oklahoma and just compare it to the regular season, not too much to really jumps off the page. We had, let's see, you know, yeah, I mean, everything you expect. Devontae Davis, Chris Boyd, Gary Johnson, Brandon Jones, Anthony Wheeler, P.J. Locke, Jeffrey McCulloch. That was it. You know, much more of a four, either a four sort of down lineman look, or a three linebacker look, or a three down lineman look when the team went to dime, where Jeffrey McCulloch would stay on the field. 86% of snaps in this game for Jeffrey McCulloch, whereas on the season, only averaging 48% of snaps per game. B.J. Foster, speaking of the dime package, and you know, this also had to do with the fact that Caden Stearns was hurt in this game at the safety position. B.J. Foster was playing not only in his traditional joker role, joker, cowboy role, whatever you call that dime safety, that box dime safety slash linebacker. He was either playing that, or once Caden Stearns got hurt, he was playing back at the safety in all times except for when Texas went dime. At that point in time, Chris Brown would come in at the safety position. B.J. Foster would move back to the joker. But, you know, Charles Omenihu played less snaps than he's used. Charles Omenihu, only 61% of snaps in this game, 80% of snaps on the season. I'm just kind of looking through here to see guys who had big differences. Of course, Caden Stearns, 42% in this one, 96 on the season. Malcolm Roach, a slight uptick in this game. Taequann Graham, a pretty big downtick in this game from 32% on the season to 21% on the season. And we're going to have a separate podcast. Look, we're not going to have any shortage of things to talk about through the offseason, because this is the podcast. This is the podcast about the personnel of the Texas Longhorns football team. And we just have a lot to talk about the defensive line and what's going to happen after Breckenhager, Charles Omenihu, and Chris Nelson are all gone. And the fact of the matter is, those guys weren't really that good in this game. Chris Nelson was pretty good. He was actually better on a per snap. Let's look at him on a per snap basis. So if we look at it on a per snap basis in this game, so the defensive market share of productivity, Gary Johnson, once again, 30.43% of the market share of productivity in this game. And Anthony Wheeler, the linebacker, in second place at 20.11% market share productivity. That's 50% of your production on the whole entire defense coming from the linebacker positions. And Gary Johnson was at a 5.43 snaps per production. He was at that kind of clip as opposed to 7.74 on the season. Anthony Wheeler was at 8.11 compared to his 11.73 on the season. Man, those guys played out of their minds, and they needed to, because that defensive line got wrecked. And I think a lot of people saw Breckenhager's Instagram tweets or shit. I'm so fucking old. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cuss. But man, it makes me feel old when I say things like Instagram tweets. It's the kind of thing that my daughter, like, I have like five more years before she's like, "Dad," when I say those kinds of things. But he had the Instagram post where it was like, you know, such a super busted hand and a bloody busted hand. And I was like, well, do you know what that is? He watched back the film, or he was tilted up. Maybe he didn't want to watch back the film. Maybe he just knew. But they say that he had an accident on Saturday night. I would say that accident probably, I mean, if Breck is anything like I was in college, maybe he went and had some beers that night, and maybe he got tilted about something he did. And I would say that, you know, when I wrote the column up, I didn't put any of the GIFs in there. I didn't film any of these blocks at number 74 over there at the right tackle hat on Breckenhager. But that dude treated Breckenhager like a dude who had insulted his mom. Like I wrote in the column, like a dude who diddled his little sister. I mean, he treated him. That Oklahoma offensive line had it out for Breckenhager. And it probably had to do with the stuff he said. You know, it's Brecken gave them locker room material. And Breckenhager's an awesome dude. And I love him. And he's a Texas Longhorn through and through, to the bone. And he's a unique kid, and he's a wonderful spirit. And he's a good football player, and he's better than a lot of people ever gave him credit for. He's at Texas, he's always played a little reckless. He's always been a little bit of a bull in a china shop. But goddamn, nobody could ever claim that guy doesn't give max effort on every play. And he's playing hurt. He's playing with one arm. With that said, man, I mean, he got posterized a few times in this game. Nowhere near as effective as he has been all season. I mean, on the season, Breckenhager, 9.61 snaps per production caused. In this game, 17.6 snaps per production caused. I don't think that I need to tell you guys who are listening to this podcast that's dedicated to the personnel of the Texas Longhorns football team that you're big fans, you watched the game, you might have watched it back again. Texas wasn't getting pressure on Kyler Murray. What you might be surprised by is here, let's look back through the deep dig. All right, so we have, let's just look at it. So the disruption here. So let's say sacks, hits, pressures. We have a sum of 9 for that category, right? If we look at it versus OU the first time, I think it's actually a little bit better. Let's see, OU the first time, sacks, hits, and pressures. It was only 4. So, I mean, Texas was getting to Kyler Murray even better in this game than they were getting to him in the first meeting. Do you know what the difference? So, we can get off the defensive line. Charles played fine. He ended up with a sack. Chris Nelson, actually, I told you I was going to get to the snaps. So, Chris Nelson, 8.61 snaps per production caused on the season. In this game, 7.36 snaps per production caused on the season. Charles Omenihu, 8.14 snaps on the season. In this game, Charles Omenihu, 8.76. So not that much difference out of those guys. Where we saw the difference was in the linebackers. Those are the guys that helped to help that lower kind of per-play average and on the season. And like I told people on Orange Bloods, I said, look, man, that doesn't count all these defensive penalties, you know? All these pass interferences on plays where it would, you know, it would have racked those numbers up to just so very high. And I get that, you know, you can't just when in football we live in this is small sample theater 3000, right? Like we live in a small sample world in football. Nobody knows that better than me as somebody that's got to create models for predictive, you know, presumptions for the National Football League. I understand. But I don't feel like it's the same thing to say that Texas' average yards per play allowed to the Oklahoma offense would have been a lot higher without all the defensive pass interferences, all the defensive holdings, all of those plays. I think it's a little bit different than saying, look, Leonard Fournette's yards per carry would be much lower if you took out his 2 big-ass runs. It's just different. And I understand that both are inherent to the game. It's like, all right, Leonard Fournette's going to break those big runs. Do you know why? Because he's big and he's fast. And once he gets to the second level, to the secondary, he's much faster than anybody ever expects. And he can lower his shoulders and he can run over any safety or any cornerback in the league. So it should be baked in that a couple of times a season that's going to happen. And right, so we have median projections in fantasy to take out to be able to take out those outliers on the very, very skinny parts of the curve, right? As a measure of central tendency up from those tails, right? But in a game like this, like you don't necessarily expect there to be anything baked in with a bunch of bad penalties on the backside of the defense. And boy, was it brutal on the backside of this defense. Before I go on to talk about the backside of this defense, because Chris Boyd is yet. I was watching the Senior Bowl acceptance show today. Do you realize that Chris Boyd, the cornerback for Texas, is yet to accept his Senior Bowl invite? After, dude, he needs to accept his Senior Bowl invite and yesterday, because after this game, he's at risk of new Senior Bowl director Jim Nagy maybe even yanking that thing. He needs to accept his Senior Bowl invite. And anybody who's listening to this, who's close to Chris Boyd, and I know that there probably are between the two of you that are listening, besides the two that have already let me know. I forget, you know, who knows how big this audience is? I have no idea. But you got to figure, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, you have some stake in the Texas Longhorns. So maybe that'll be something that I say on the Ticket City Pod that goes out on the Apple and the iTunes and everything like that. I'm going to tell somebody to remind Chris Boyd that he needs to accept his Senior Bowl invite. Regardless, Gary Johnson, why didn't he have a Senior Bowl invite? Why didn't he have a Shrine Game invite? Gary Johnson's been the most productive player on the Texas defense, and I would argue, honestly, if you can consider him a guy who can drop back and play that sort of dime linebacker position with his unbelievable elite speed. You forget Gary Johnson. He's one of the fastest guys on the entire team. He's so productive because he's such a sick sideline-to-sideline player, but he's shown that he can come downhill, he can hit, he can get his run fits right, he can create tackles for loss. He's really, really good. And he continued to play really, really well in this game. And so with Gary Johnson, you know, who knows? Maybe he hopes people keep sleeping on him. Maybe there's something there in the, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's something there in his background that scouts know about. Why are we not hearing more about Gary Johnson? Why are we not hearing more about Gary Johnson? He was the linchpin of that defense all year long. He was great. Anthony Wheeler, despite my big hesitancies about how slow and stiff he is, was great in this game. They made up for what was going on along that defensive line. They were the ones getting their run fits right. They were the ones helping to keep that yards per play down. It sure as hell was not on the back end. Chris Boyd, Chris Boyd got burned. This was the first time this ever happened for the deep dig. Chris Boyd got burned on a coverage snap where the ball wasn't even thrown to him. You remember it. It was in the end zone, and Caden Stern should have had the interception, but he didn't because Boyd got called for a holding or a pass interference. I don't even want to go back and look even what it was, but it was something. It was CeeDee Lamb that got by him, and he grabbed him. And he got called for it, and that play got called off. And we don't usually, at the deep dig, what we've always said is, as far as coverage burns go, for one, we're not DB coaches. For two, we never played DB. For three, we always try and go as easy on these guys as we possibly can, right? And so it's only when it is a situation that anybody who has studied the game or just been around coaches their whole life or just, you know, a remedial understanding of different coverages and different ways the defenses address these wide receivers and these you know, different route combinations. We're not going to charge anybody with a burn. And the other thing is, too, we've talked about it here, right here on this pod. The other thing is, too, I don't get all 22s from Texas. You think they give me all 22s? They don't give me even all 22s in draft season like some of these other teams do. Texas is the one school, even though this is a school I cover, that doesn't recognize me as a legit member of the NFL draft media, even though I'm the goddamn Pro Football Writers of America new media chairman. I have a vote for Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year. I have a vote for NFL MVP. I get to go inside Lucas Oil Stadium as an officer of the PFWA, and I get to watch drills from inside Lucas Oil at the combine. But Texas doesn't recognize me as a legitimate member of the NFL draft media, so they won't give me all 22 film. And they're probably right not to, because this is the other half of my job. This is the other half of my income is working for Orange Bloods and doing this stuff related to the Texas Longhorns. And they probably know that I go super in-depth with the stuff that I ride. And they might not want me riding in-depth stuff if I'm the all 22. The point is, half the time I can't even see the route. I can't see the coverage. Like, I can't figure it out. Like the TV broadcast camera's no good. And so, you know, I'll only charge these guys with a burn at times whenever I am just sure with my limited understanding of all, basically of all the things in football. The two things that I have the most limited understanding regarding are quarterback mechanics. You're never going to hear me talk on this thing in any depth about how, you know, this guy gets the ball off right when the weight hits the ball of his foot on his back pivot foot and just gets, you know, like, those, like, I've never played quarterback, or I don't know quarterback coaches. I didn't grow up with those kind of guys. I grew up with line coaches, you know, defensive coordinators. And so the other thing is on the back end with these coverages, there are coverages that are super easy to understand. Quarters, you know, cover two, cover three, Tampa two, palms. Like, there are things that you can easily take it like 2 days of your life, and you, like, even the most remedial football mind can figure it out and be able to identify it. But there are some times where I'm like, well, like, why is he getting into a veil technique whenever this guy's giving him like a clouded corner release where he's trying to take him outside, then come inside of the guy. Like, why, like, what, like, what's going on here? What's the interplay there? What is that corner thinking? And I won't get into what he's thinking. I'll just say, look, I don't understand this concept. If it is what I think it is, it's a burn, but I'm not sure it's a burn. I'm not going to give him a burn. In this game, Chris Boyd was burned on a play where the ball wasn't even thrown on him. And to go back to what I was just saying, like, I say I don't want to give these guys burns. I say all is well that ends well. If there's a guy that gets burned on a play where the football doesn't go his way, I say, look, it doesn't matter. All is well that ends well. Well, he didn't get thrown at. He didn't get burned. In this situation, since the penalty got called, they took the interception off the board and caused direct points for Oklahoma. All didn't end well. Chris Boyd got burned. In all, Boyd was burned three times in coverage in this game versus Oklahoma. That's an outrageous number. Texas was only burned four times in coverage in the first meeting, period. Here, let's just look at the burns this year. So versus OU in the Big 12 championship game, Texas had 8 burns. Versus Kansas, 0 burns. Versus Iowa State, 0 burns. Versus Tech, 4 burns. Versus West Virginia, 3 burns. Versus Oklahoma State, 4 burns. Versus Baylor, 4. OU, 4. Kansas State, 3. TCU, 3. USC, 3. Tulsa, 3. Maryland, 4. So it was the burns, man. The defensive backs as a whole were bad, and they got burned. It's just, it is what it is. CeeDee Lamb's good. Hollywood Brown is good. The tight end from California, what's his name? Calicutta? Calatanka? Whatever his name is. That guy's good, man. Oklahoma's got an awesome offensive line that has gotten better through the course of the year. They got a great pass-catching tight end that's going to be probably a different kind of dude than Mark Andrews ever was. That guy's more like a move sort of tight end. Big, big hands on that guy. The missed tackles were down from the first game. 14 in this one, 19 in the Big 12 championship game. I will say the bright spot in the secondary was Devontae Davis. He allowed one terrible burn that you definitely remember. That was against CeeDee Lamb in the fourth quarter. But only 33% completion percentage when targeted, which was he had an even 50% completion percentage on the season. That's to compare, like, Chris Boyd had an 80% completion percentage when targeted, and then separately from that, even when he wasn't targeted, once he had a burn. So when he was targeted, he was burned twice, and he allowed on the whole 80% of targets that went into his clear coverage to go as completions, at least, with two of those being burns. Devontae Davis also racked up two pass breakups and a separate blow up. So the problem we said on this podcast last week, we said the defense needs to get pressure on Kyler Murray using the traditional pass rush with the front three. Texas needs PJ Locke to not miss a ton of tackles, and which was, we didn't even talk about PJ Locke. How many goddamn PJ Locke in this game? I mean, there's five tackles. Just, at this point, I'm used to it. Big 12 championship game versus OU, the disruption numbers. P.J. Locke missed five tackles in this game. In all, Texas missed 14. Without P.J. Locke's five, man, like, those five tackles made a difference. And Texas couldn't get burned in coverage. Those are the three things I said. They're the three things that happened. All right, we're going long here, so I'm gonna move to offense and go through it a little bit quicker. My apologies to my guy, one of my two listeners who said, "What's going on? You always cut the offense short." It's because I'd start talking too long, and I got to keep these things around 30 minutes. Okay, Big 12, the skill player participation. Let's see here. So we had Trey Watson at 54% of snaps, Keonta Ingram at 44% of snaps. We only saw Daniel Young in. Really on only one snap of action. He was in on two or three snaps where Texas had to call timeouts, though. Ehlinger, of course, played all the snaps on the year. Colin Johnson, or all the snaps on the game. Colin Johnson played 100% of snaps in this game as well. Little Jordan Humphrey, almost 100% at 97. Devin Duvernay at 85% of snaps. Brennan Eagles, we saw a big uptick from him. He played 15% of snaps, whereas on the season, only a 7% snap participant. He really took over for Gerard Hurd in this game, who, goddamn, how do I get... Okay, so Gerard Hurd only 9% of snaps in this game, 32% of snaps on average over the course of the season. And, of course, Gerard Hurd only got in whenever Texas knew they had to score points, and so what did they do? They went to four true wide receivers on the football field. Why don't you do that more whenever the game is not out of sight? It's like, this gives us the best chance to score and go big. Like, let's get four wide receivers out there. The only times Texas has done that this season has been when they are down and they're out of football games. It's happened versus Maryland, it's happened versus Oklahoma State, and it's happened now versus Oklahoma. Along the offensive line, a pretty bad game for everybody involved as far as disruption. In a bad game for Calvin Anderson, like, let's just talk. All right, so Calvin Anderson, his average deep dig grade on the season for 2018 has been a 77.24. In this game, he scored like a 75.88, and it's because he could not get any movement in inside zone. The whole team couldn't. And this offensive line, look, I'll tell you the first problem with this game is that on plays wherever Sam Ehlinger was protected beautifully, because Oklahoma was only bringing three men on a blitz, he missed wide open wide receivers and tight ends probably four or five times. That could have been the difference in the game. The defensive line, Brecken Hager holding up a little bit better on some of these critical down and distance situations, that could have been the distance. Maybe cutting the number of burns in half, it could have been the difference. Sam Ehlinger may be hitting on half of these plays that were overthrows and just bad, bad placement, bad touch. You know, that could have been the difference. There's so many things that could have been the difference. And I guess what that goes to show is that, you know, this team is probably not as far off as it seems like if you just look at the sum of all those parts. With that said, man, a win's a win, a loss, a win's a win, a loss is a loss. Calvin Anderson in this game only allowed disruption once, though, on 68 snaps. So if you look at his snaps per disruption allowed on the regular season, that thing dropped towards the end to 25.88. Now, of course, this is a small sample, but 68 is a lot better than 25.88. Here's the problem. If I go pull up, let me pull up the, as always, Alex Dunlap. We call him Mr. Organization. Sorry, I'm having to get here into my different folders to see what the snaps per disruption was from this game. So 68 for him. And the other guy who didn't allow a bunch of disruption, Zach Shackelford. Arlong 68 on Orange Bloods will certainly be happy. Only one pressure allowed by Zach Shackelford. And Zach Shackelford, he allowed one pressure, one penalty and or active disruption allowed on 68 snaps. If you look at Shaq's average grade on the season, a 75.57, he scored well over 77 in this game. So Shackelford played well. Anderson played well as far as allowing disruption, but not as far as generating movement in inside zone. He was bad. He kept losing his feet. His feet kept slipping from underneath him. He looked like he was walking like a duck. It was no good. Here's where the rest of the issue comes in. I'm tired of beating around the bush about this. Patrick Vahe's been bad. He kind of is bad. 2 run stuffs, 1 pressure, 1 sack allowed. 17 snaps per disruption allowed and or penalty cost. Right guard, Elijah Rodriguez, 68 snaps, 2 pressures allowed, 2 false start penalties. 17 snaps per disruption allowed and or penalty cost. Samuel Cosmi, who had a big knockdown and a big pin in this game, he had a good deep dig grade of 77.2. Actually, a small bit better grade than Zach Shackelford did on the day, because in this game, and I think it was the one play, he scored his highest grade, a grade that I've only given out once this entire season, a grade of 2 on an individual snap. He had the most dominated. Samuel Cosmi had one of the most dominating snaps that I've seen out of a Texas offensive lineman since I've been doing this since the year 2013. Up there with some of Connor Williams' most dominating snaps. And I think giving him a 2 on that snap really helped with his average, or else he wouldn't have been better than Zach Shackelford. Because look at him. I mean, a 77.2 grade, and actually, that's his average this year has been a 78.23. That doesn't sound like a big difference, but on that scale, this is a big difference. We're talking about 1 point of difference being the difference in, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of dollars on an NFL draft grading scale. The difference between a player that consistently scores a 78 and a player that consistently scores an 80 is a player who might be drafted and a player who's sure to be drafted. So Samuel Cosmi was not as good in this game. And when you look at it, as far as the disruption allowed, from a guy that only allowed disruption on the season once every 38.77 snaps, Samuel Cosmi, 1 run stuff allowed, 1 sack allowed, 1 quarterback hit allowed, and 1 false start penalty. He did have the knockdown in the pin, but that he's still 17 snaps per disruption allowed and or penalty caused. It was too much disruption allowed from the Texas defense. Or I'm sorry, it was too much disruption allowed by the Texas offensive line, by the Oklahoma defense. Too many pressures, too many run stuffs. I mean, only 1 sack, but there were the quarterback hits. You know, no, I'm sorry, Vahe allowed a sack too. And I know what you're thinking. You're saying, wait, there had to be more than 2 sacks. And yeah, there were, but one of them was definitely Keontae Ingram's fault. And then I think another one was Andrew Beck's fault. What this Big 12 championship game came down to, in the end, it was 5 things. 3 on the defense, 2 on the offense. How correctable they are before the Sugar Bowl, I have no idea, because we've seen Tom Herman and Todd Orlando pull rabbit out of hat after hat after hat after hat over the course of their respective careers. 1, the Texas defensive line getting pushed around by a great Oklahoma offensive line, and the Texas linebackers fighting valiantly to make it seem like it wasn't as big a deal. Two, P.J. Locke continuing to miss important tackles at critical times during the football game, adding on to his unbelievable 28 missed tackles on the season, tacking on five more to make it 33, even though we won't count those in the season-long grades. He's already the leader of all time by over 12 tackles over Peter Jenkins in 2015, who had 16 misses. The coverage burns on the back end and the penalties by the defensive backs. And it wasn't just coverage burns by corners, it was coverage burns by safeties. One of them, I couldn't tell whether it was Brandon Jones or Caden who got burned. I just gave him half a burn each, but there was someone got burned. That was clear. I didn't know what they were supposed to be doing because they probably weren't doing the right shit in the first place. I'm sorry about the cussing. And then on the offensive side, it was Sam Ehlinger on the plays where he did get time, and of which those instances, of which there were many. Missing receivers who had managed to get open. Big plays that had managed to come open, that had been dialed up by Tim Beck, who's been everybody's whipping boy. Tom Herman. You know, the Herb Hand, the Texas offensive staff. Plays that were well-designed, and Sam couldn't get it there. He didn't have the touch. He didn't have the placement on those plays. Not to take away from the plays where he did, because he did. But there were opportunities left on the table, and that was number four. And number five was the offensive line and the disruption allowed. Everybody on the Texas offensive line in this game, besides Zach Shackelford and Calvin Anderson, allowed disruption to occur at a clip like Patrick Vahe has allowed throughout the course of the entire season. And in a Big 12 championship game, that is not going to get it done. My name is Alex Dunlap. This has been The Deep Dig.